We are this morning in the second week of a series called How to Be Rich at What Matters Most. And if you were here last week, you heard me say that I'm really excited about the content of what we're talking about, because I truly believe that it's one of those things that can totally change our perspective on things, that it can really change our life. And not just sometime down the future, but actually today, that it can immediately have a transformative effect on us and how we live our daily life. And so each one of these messages this month will kind of build on itself. So if you weren't able to be here last week, I'd really encourage you to go to the website, listen to the audio version. But in the meantime, for those of you who were here, let's help those who weren't. Last week we talked about there was good news and there was bad news, right? When it comes to this whole idea of wealth and riches, and the good news was what? The good news is that we are rich. That's right. The good news is we are rich. We talked about some statistics that said if you made at your house $37,000, you are in the top 4% of income earners in the whole world. Okay? That's pretty rich, all right? But if you're lucky enough to make $48,000, then you are in the top 1% of people in the world. That's incredibly rich. We are rich. The reality is God has blessed us with far more than we need. We are, what are we? We're rich. That's right. We have rich people opportunities that comes along with that. And it's just a great blessing, don't we? We have rich people opportunities. We can send our kids to school. That's a rich people opportunity. We can go to a movie. That's a rich people opportunity. We can go to a ball game where our kids can play in sports. Those are rich people opportunities, and God has just blessed us incredibly. And we should not feel guilty about that. We should be grateful for what God has given to us, because the reality is God has blessed us with more than we need. We are rich. That's the good news. But if you're here last week, you know that there was also some bad news that came along with the good news. And if the good news was we are rich, if you were here last week, what's the bad news? We are rich. That's right. Because just as the being rich is a good news and it comes with lots of opportunities, being rich also comes with some negatives as well. I mean, and you might have experienced this, in fact, these rich people problems, right? Anybody have a rich people problem? In fact, whenever you go to complain or whatever, maybe we can kind of do this together. We can encourage one another in this way. If we hear someone complaining, we can say, yeah, but that's a rich person problem. Here's what I mean. Last week, Rhonda's folks were in town, and last weekend, and we, on Saturday night about 7 o'clock, wanted to go out to dinner in Bloomington. All right, you've tried to do that at 7 o'clock on a Saturday, all right? We went to the Outback. They said it would be an hour, all right? An hour to wait for supper. That's a rich person problem, right? All right, rich person problem. We were driving to go pick them up over Interstate 69 and through the country, and they'd never been here. And so when we were going over there, we were trying to make a phone call, but it's out there like in the middle of nowhere, and we had no service and no cell phone service. What's that? That's a rich person problem, right? You miss your airline flight, or your flight is delayed. What's that? That's a rich person problem, right? So lots of the things that we complain about or that cause us grief in our everyday life, what are they? They're rich people problems, right? And that, if we can just get that in our mind and encourage one another with that, it's like, yeah, that's a problem, but it's a rich person problem, right? There are worse problems. In fact, Jesus actually said, and we looked at last week, there were four much more severe problems that come along with our wealth, much more serious issues. In fact, the Bible would indicate that being rich, while it's a great blessing, it's also one of the biggest spiritual obstacles that we have to overcome, right? Because being rich, it's easy to be overconfident. It's easy to be arrogant, right? To think that because of our inflated net worth, we have an inflated self-worth as well, and that we did it all ourselves, right? So it's easy to become arrogant. It's also harder to trust in God. We looked at that last week, and we're actually going to talk about that a little bit more today. With great wealth, it just becomes harder to trust in God. It also distracts us from true priorities, right? It keeps us from focusing on the things that are the most important, because we have all these rich people opportunities that kind of get in the way sometimes. And along with being rich, there's more responsibility. Jesus said, to whom much is given, much is expected, or much is required. And so because we have been given a lot, much is required of us. And so that's kind of bad news, all right? All those things are bad news. In fact, it's some pretty bad news. Jesus said it this way in Luke chapter 18. He said, how hard it is for the rich. Who's that? That's us. We are rich. How hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of God. Indeed, How hard is it, Jesus? I'm glad you asked. He said, indeed, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God. And so, because Jesus knew how hard it would be, he talked a lot about money. Did you ever notice that? Jesus talked a whole lot about money. People come sometimes complain, you know, the church, all they talk about is money. Well, if we talked about money half as much as Jesus did, we really talk about money a lot. And you could really think that. But Jesus talked about money more than he talked about heaven and hell combined. Did you know that? He talked about money more than almost anything else because, not because he was so interested in finances, but because he was interested in our heart. And Jesus knew that the primary competitor for our heart was money. Jesus knew and he realized that because he created us, that the primary competitor for our heart was money. God's not concerned with us having stuff. God just doesn't want our stuff to have us. It's not that he doesn't want us to have money. He doesn't want our money to have us. Right? And so Jesus knew that their biggest competitor for our heart was money. In fact, he said it this way. No man can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. That's always interesting to me that Jesus, when he's setting up this great dichotomy, it's like you can't serve two masters. And he didn't say you can't serve both God and power. You might have thought he would say that. You cannot serve both God and prestige or God and popularity or God, he could any number of things. He didn't even say God and Satan. All right. What did he say? You cannot serve both God and money. Why? Because he knew that money would be the primary competition for our heart. And because he is above all interested in our heart, he wanted to talk about that thing which he knew was the biggest competitor for our heart, and that was money. Wealth becomes a substitute for God, and Jesus knew that. And why is that? Why is wealth such an attractive alternative to God? Why is it such an attractive false God? Why is it the biggest competitor for our heart? I believe it's because money promises something that only God can provide. Money promises things that only God can provide. It's deceitful. Money's deceitful. Did you ever notice that? It'll lie to you. Your money, it will. It'll lie to you. All right. I use that. That's kind of the title for today's talk, The Deceitfulness of Riches. I pulled that from a story that Jesus told. If you're a church person, you know it as the parable of the sower. And he just talked about things that hindered people in their spiritual life. And one of those things he said was the deceitfulness of riches. Because your money will lie to you. It's like this. Any of you know what these are? All right. If you got kids, you know what these are, right? You go to these pizza places, right? Different ones. And you can, you know, after you eat your pizza, of course, after your meal, then you can go and you get these tokens and you play these video games and all different kinds of fun games. And then out of those machines, out of the games, come these tickets. Right? And then you take these tickets and you go up to the front and you redeem these tickets for a prize. And when you're little, right? You think that if you just get enough of these tickets, you can get the coolest prize. You can get a prize that will change your life. Right? And then you realize, you know, you get 40 of these tickets and you go up and you turn it in for the prize and then this is what you get. Right? You get this little ring, this little spider ring, and you get this little Chuck E. Cheese whistle. Right? And it, you know, that's pretty cool, right? But I don't know if it's life-changing, all right? Deceitfulness, these tickets are deceitful. But we think if we just get more of these tickets, then things will be good. In fact, a few years ago, Chase had a birthday party at one of these places, all right? And a couple of his buddies hit the jackpot, all right? They hit, like, thousands of tickets, all right? And they had, like, over 5,000 tickets. They all put their tickets together, and they were going to get this prize that was going to change their lives, but they couldn't agree on what to get and what thing. And so you know what they ended up with? 918 Tootsie Rolls, all right? It was deceitful, right? They had this in mind, how great it was going to be. And we, you know, Tootsie Rolls, that was it. Tickets are deceitful. You know, when we're little, it's these kinds of tickets. And then when we get older, we trade those tickets in for these tickets. And we think, you know, if we could just get enough of these tickets, then we could get that something that would make us happy. We could get that something that would change our life. If we could just get enough of these tickets, then we could be secure. Then we could be satisfied. If we could just get enough of these tickets. But just like these tickets are deceitful. Jesus said, these tickets are deceitful as well. In fact, he told us that they are the primary competition for our heart. And we say, I would never serve money. You know, Jesus said you can't serve both God and money. And I'm sure you probably were thinking, it's like, well, I would never serve money. You know, but if you've ever bought something you didn't need with money you didn't have to impress people you didn't like anyway, right? Guilty, right? You might be loving and serving money. If you've ever said your kid's 12 at the zoo or at the movie theater, you know, when he's really 13, but to get that kid discount, you know, you've traded your integrity for tickets, right? Because we think that more tickets will make us happy and more satisfied. The reality is money promises what only God can provide. Money promises what only God can provide. Money promises happiness, right? If we just get enough of these tickets, then we can buy that thing that's going to make us happy, right? If we just get enough of these, then we can buy what's going to make us happy and make us satisfied. It also promises security, right? If we just get enough of these, then we will be secure. Then we'll be protected. Then nothing can get to us. If we just have enough of these, then we can be secure. But of course, as soon as someone gets sick, as soon as some life-changing thing happens, you realize that money promises something that it can't deliver. Solomon, who was the richest person and the wisest person that ever lived, said this in Proverbs chapter 18. He says, look at this contrast. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it, and what are they? They are safe. But on the other hand, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it to be an unscalable wall. The wealth, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. On the other hand, the wealth of the rich is their strong tower. It's their fortified. It's what they're trusting in. They imagine it to be someplace that's safe. You see, Paul, in the verse that we're kind of coming back to all through this, he tells Timothy to tell rich people how to be rich well. And he tells them not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, right, and so deceitful, but instead to put their hope in God, who richly provides. Because what he knew is that as wealth increases, as our stack grows, our hope begins to migrate from God to our stack. Right? As our wealth increases, it's just natural for our hope to go from God to our stack. And so we begin to imagine that there's an amount of money that would make us, as Solomon wrote, an unscalable wall that would keep the bad stuff away. Right? If we just have enough money, then we can keep the bad stuff from happening to us. And so here's a question. How much money would you need to have to protect yourself from all imaginable possibilities? Right? I'll let you think about that for a minute. How much money would you have to make yourself an unscalable wall so nothing could touch you? You would be untouchable, an unscalable wall. You think about it for a minute, and I'm going to tell you because I've done some research into every one of your financial situations. Right? And I know the answer, but you think about that for a minute. How much money would it take for you to become an unscalable wall? Right? You got the number in mind? I'm going to tell you. The answer, more than you currently have. Right? Am I right? That's always the answer, right? Because there is never enough, right? As we talked about last week, the rich line moves, right? You think it's a number, and then you get to that number, and then it's a different number, right? There's never enough that would keep us, because we always think to ourselves, yeah, but what if? Yeah, this is good, but what if? And there is never enough. You see, the name of the Lord, if we put our hope in God, that is a strong place. It says people run to it and are safe. If we put our hope in finances, we put our hope in our wealth, we only imagine that we are safe. You see, we imagine something that's not true because this wealth, money, is deceitful. It'll lie to you. It'll make you think things that aren't true. And if we get a big enough stack, we begin to think that there is enough money that will make us secure, that we can save our way into safety. We can save our way into security. And so, in order for that not to happen, Paul instructs Timothy to tell rich people. And who are rich people? We are, all right? Because God has blessed us with more than we need. We are rich, all right? He tells Timothy, here, you tell those rich people how to be rich well. And here's what he says. 1 Timothy 6. It's kind of the theme verse as we come back to every week. It says this. command those who are rich, that's us, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Paul says, you tell them not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, right? It's so deceitful, but you tell them to put their hope in God, who richly provides. Don't put your hope in riches, but in God who richly provides. And so we're going to add to our key thought. Last week, we began by saying, God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. Today, we're going to add another line to that. And next week, another line still. Our line for today is simply this. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Okay, can we say that all together now, beginning with the first part? God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Now, all of us good church people, you know, we're here on Sunday. And so whether you just walked in checking things out, if you've been here, you're in church now. And so we know the right answers to questions, right? When you're in church, you just know questions and you know what the right answer is supposed to be, whether or not it's true or not. And most of us would not admit, we would say, I don't trust in riches, I trust in God. All right? And so for the rest of our time together, just we're going to kind of give a little reality check. All right? We're going to give kind of three signs that perhaps our hope, our trust, our faith has begun to migrate from God to money. That has begun to migrate from God, to whom who richly blesses, to our riches, to our stack of money. All right? And if you're like me, and if you're honest, you may be able to see yourself in some of these things. All right? Are you ready? All right? If you're taking notes, the first thing, the first sign that your hope may have begun to migrate is this. You never have enough. Yeah, you never have enough. All right? Again, Solomon said this. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. So I'll just ask you. Are you satisfied with your income? All right? Do you have enough? That's a hard question, isn't it? Because again, the rich line moves, doesn't it? It continues to move. We think one amount will be enough and then it's not enough. But if you love and trust money, you will never be satisfied. I mean, how much does it take to be happy? How much does it take to be secure? The answer is always a little bit more, right? Just a little bit more. The great theologians, Bob the Tomato and Larry the Cucumber. Anybody know those guys? All right? VeggieTales, all right? One of the greatest VeggieTales of all time, Bob the Tomato asked Larry, because he was kind of collecting a whole bunch of stuff and getting a little materialistic, and Bob said, Larry, how much stuff do you need to be happy? And Larry thought about that for a minute, and he said, I don't know. How much stuff is there? And that's kind of the way we approach it, isn't it? Because it's always just, I don't know how much it takes to be happy. How much is there? Let me try it out. Let me see. And the reality is that if we love and trust money, if our hope is beginning to migrate, we'll never have enough and we'll never be satisfied. Rich people are plagued with discontent. We just are. We're plagued with discontent because our desire for money and our desire for stuff is an appetite. All right? It's an appetite. And here's the reality about appetites. Appetites are never fully and finally satisfied. Okay? They're not. Appetites are not finally satisfied. The only word your appetites know is more. Right? It's whatever appetite it is. Okay? The only word your appetites know is more. And since our desire for stuff is an appetite, if we feed that appetite, what happens to it? If you feed an appetite, what happens? It grows, right? You feed an appetite, it grows. You want to shrink an appetite, you have to starve that appetite, right? But so the reality is, because our desire for stuff is an appetite, and appetites are never fully and finally satisfied, the more stuff we have, the more stuff we want, right? Because of the way that works, the more stuff we have, the more stuff we want. Here's what it looks like in real life, all right? We do this thing called upgrading, all right? upgrading. That's when you trade in something, a perfectly good something, for the same something. All right? I've heard that people that are so rich that they would go to a car lot drive a perfectly good car to a car lot. Right? They give them that perfectly good car and a whole bunch more money and drive away in what? A car. A perfectly good car. Right? That's called upgrading. That's discontent. All right? I've heard of people who would, you know, remodel their kitchen and they would take out a refrigerator and a stove and a microwave, and then they would put back in what? A refrigerator and a stove and a microwave. Right? I've heard about people who would stand in line at the mall, you know, to get this new thing called an iPhone. In their pocket, they've got what? iPhone. All right? Because we want to upgrade. Okay? We're discontented because rich people are discontented. Our culture knows this full well. They capitalize on it, all right? That's what commercials, that's what advertising are all about. They feed that need of discontent, right? They stir up discontent because they know if they can make us discontent, then we'll want the next, best, greatest thing. When do we get discontent? When we're aware that there's something better, right? And so advertising is all about awareness. Just, hey, did you know there's something better than what you got? And you'll be happy if you get this something. Right? And again, deceitfulness of riches, the deceitfulness of tickets. It promises something that it can't deliver. Rich people are plagued with discontent. And if you love and trust money, you find you never have enough. And the reality is you would not have enough even if you had twice what you have now. You think that's not true. You think if I had twice as much as I have now, then I'd be satisfied and I'd be content. The reality is if you're not satisfied and content with what you've got, because it's an appetite, the more you feed it, the more it wants. You get twice as much, three times as much, you will still not be satisfied or content with what you've got. And so one way to know if your hope has migrated, has begun to migrate from God to our stack, to our stuff, is if we have this feeling that there is never enough. Right? This is a spiritual issue that we need to take seriously, being careful that our hope does not migrate. A second sign that our hope has begun to migrate is you find it increasingly difficult to give big. You find it increasingly difficult to give big. All right? Did you know that statistically, the bigger people's stack gets, the richer people get, the less they give as a percentage of their income. All right? That seems counterintuitive, but it's statistics spread out. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule, and maybe you're one of those exceptions. But generally speaking, when the stack is bigger, people give less. And when the stack is smaller, they give more. Well, why is that? Well, poor people aren't sucked into the myth that their stack will keep them secure, right? They know they've not got enough to do it, to get the job done. So they're more free, they're more generous with what they do have because they know their hope is not in their stack, right? They know if their hope is in their stack, they're in trouble, all right? And so they never put their hope in their stack, they put their hope in God, and so they're much more free with giving. The reality is when wealth becomes our hope, then if it becomes our sense of security, we'll be compelled to hoard it, right? If this is our hope, if this is our security, our hand will automatically begin to just tighten around it. Because if it's our hope, if that's our security, if that's what's keeping us, that's what's making us happy, that's what's keeping us safe, well, then we can't get rid of any of it, right? We can't get any of it away because that's our hope and that's our security. As we get more wealthy and our stack gets bigger, our hands close tighter. And if we're not careful, the more we have, we'll find it increasingly harder and harder to give big. Now, what we think is this. We think, well, I'll give when I get that raise. I'll give when we get the car paid off. I'll give when we get out of credit card debt. I'll give when the kids are out of college. I'll give when you fill in the blank, right? We think that's what we tell ourselves. We deceive ourselves into thinking that we will give then. But that's buying into the deceitfulness of riches. First Timothy tells us that kind of thinking, that these tickets will not buy us life that is really life. And Paul wanted his readers to be good at being rich. I don't want us to be average rich people. I don't want us to be normal rich people. I want us to be good at it. I want us to be good at being rich. I don't want us to be those people that say, no, I'm going to give later. I want us to be people that say, no, God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I'm not going to trust in riches. I'm going to trust in Him who richly provides. Why would I trust in riches when I could trust in the one who supplies those riches? Why would I trust in wealth when I could trust in the one who gave me the wealth in the first place? I want us to be good at being rich. I don't want us to say, yeah, we'll give later. I want us to say, we'll give now. I want us to be good at it now. And so what we're going to do, we're going to give pork and beans like you've never heard of. How many of you brought some pork and beans today? Need to show me some love for pork and beans. All right. We had people that brought in pork and beans today. Why? Because we're rich and we've been blessed. And we're going to bless other people in those Thanksgiving baskets. And we're going to, because we're rich, we're going to give now and we're going to be good at it. And there's some, many of you today are going to grab one of those Operation Christmas Child little brochures that's out on that rack in the back. And you're going to fill up shoe boxes and you're going to give that to kids who otherwise wouldn't have anything. Why? Because we're rich and we're not going to trust in our riches, but we're going to trust in the one who richly provides. In a week or two, when we get the angel tree things out there with the kids from the different schools that aren't going to get any Christmas, we're going to adopt some of those kids. We're going to adopt more than ever before. Why? Because we are rich. God has blessed us with more than we need. We are rich. We're not going to trust in our riches. We're not going to trust in our stack. We're going to trust in the one who gave us the stack. We're going to trust in the one who richly provides. And in a couple of weeks, when we collect a special secret offering for the Boys and Girls Club, it's going to be an extravagant offering. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be incredible. And we're going to go down and we're going to hand a check to those people down there. And hopefully we're going to get it on video so we can show it to you. But they're going to be flabbergasted. Why? Because of the generosity that we're going to, because we're going to practice being rich. And we're going to be good at it. And they're going to say, why are you doing this? And we're going to say, it's not because we're good. It's because God has good. And God has blessed us with more than we need. And we're going to trust in our riches. We're going to trust in the one who richly provides. So we want people to know that we have been blessed by God. We want people to know that we don't serve money, right? We serve God. Money serves us as we serve God, right? And we want people to know that because we are going to be good at being rich. But if you find yourself, if your stomach even tightens when I'm telling you about that kind of stuff, if you can feel your hand clenching on your wallet, even in the back, and you went for it even as I was talking, right? It might be. Just might be that your hope has begun to migrate from God to your stack. A final sign that you might know that that migration has begun to happen is you have money in the bank, but no peace in your heart. You have money in the bank, but no peace in your heart. Maybe you have toys in your garage, but no peace in your heart. You have clothes in your closet, but no peace in your heart. Proverbs 15:16, again, Solomon, this guy that knows all about money because he had a bunch of it, he said this, and we don't believe this, but this is what he said. Better, it's true, I'll read it and you tell me if you believe it. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. What's that first word? Better. Better a little with fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better. He says it's better. Better. I read about a guy who worked totally only with billionaires, right? With people that had great wealth, billionaires, and some of the problems that were inherent with that. And someone asked him, he said, is great wealth like that always a blessing or always a curse, or is it sometimes a blessing? And he said, it is always a curse. He said, you would not believe the trouble and the turmoil that comes with that kind of great wealth. Now, I know what you're thinking, because I'm thinking the exact same thing I'm thinking when I heard that, all right? You're thinking, let me try that for a little bit, all right? I think I could figure it out, all right? I think I could get that figured out, right? Because we don't believe, we truly don't believe. We're like Tevye, right, in Fiddler on the Roof, right? When he was told that wealth was the curse of man, he said, may the Lord smite me with it and may I never recover, right? That's what we think, right? Because we don't believe what Solomon told us. We don't believe that better with the fear of the Lord is, that's better than a lot with great turmoil. We don't believe Jesus when he says how hard it is for the rich. We think it's that other rich, right? It's easier for me because I'll have it figured out. Money won't have that trouble, won't affect on me. Money won't cause my hope to gravitate from God to it. Money won't do that to me. That's what we think. But again, the deceitfulness of the tickets, right? Money is deceitful. It will lie to you. It will lie to you. It will lie to you. And it will cause you to believe that if you just had more, you'll be happy. If you just had a little bit more, you'll be more secure. And money promises what only God can provide. Money promises what only God can provide. Here's the hard truth for some of you. Some of you make more money than your parents ever made. Some of you make more money than your parent than you ever imagined that you would make. Some of you, in spite of that, are financially strapped. You have turmoil in your financial life. You argue with your wife about that. There's stress in your life because of this. Right? And the reason is you think it's all for you, and so you consume it all. The reality is there's probably somebody in your row that makes a third of what you make or half of what you make, and they cannot comprehend for the life of them how somebody that made as much money as you could be so financially stressed about, or so stressed about money, right? Because they've learned the secret that, hey, they are already rich, and so they're going to live below their means, and they're going to not trust in their stack, but they're going to trust in Him who richly provides. If you have money in the bank, but no peace in your heart, it's a sign that your hope has migrated. And I would just encourage you to come to the realization that, wait a minute, no, I'm already rich. God has blessed me with more than I need. I am already rich. I am no longer going to trust in my riches, but in Him who richly provides. See, when we begin to believe wrongly that money or having more money will solve our problems, and that's what we believe, that's what advertising is all about. Any commercial, right? Our whole culture, any magazine cover will tell you that having a little bit more will make you happy. Having a little bit more will make you secure. When you begin to believe that, you are under the power and the influence of money, and it's deceitful. Because the commercials tell us, we imagine that just a little bit more will do it. But the reality is, and you know this to be the case, more money will not keep your kids off drugs. Right? More money by itself will not give you a happy marriage. More money by itself will not make any sick person well. More money by itself will not do anything. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. The reality is there are some of you here with lots of money in the bank, but no peace in your heart because your hope has migrated to your stack instead of the one who gave you that stack. Paul says it this way, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put your hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation in the coming age, so that they may take of the hold of the life that is truly life. The reality is these tickets don't buy you the life that's truly life. They buy you this. These tickets don't either. These tickets will not buy you the life that's truly life. They'll lie to you. They'll tell you that. They'll promise things that only God can provide. Andy Stanley asked this question. He says, which statement creates more anxiety for you? You have no money or there is no God? Right? Which statement creates more anxiety? There is no God, you have no money. Now fast forward. Imagine yourself in a hospital room just about to the end of your life and somebody asks you the same question. Right? If at the end of our lives our hope is going to be in God, why wouldn't we go ahead and put our hope in Him now? Why wouldn't we hope in the one who richly provides rather than what He has richly provided? Why would we put our hope in wealth instead of the one who provided that wealth? The reality is God has blessed us with more than we need. We're rich. So let's not put our hope in riches, but in the one who richly provides.